The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Ali Moreno here with you in the studio. We are also joined by Nader Manua, Nikki Bandini and Gab Marcotti as well. And we will be talking about lots of international action that we did see today. World Cup qualifying continues. And we will begin the show with Hungary against England and tell you what happened in Group A. Well, England won that game 4-0. But it was overshadowed by racist chants in the stands. We'll have more on that in just a minute. But England moving 5 points clear at the top of Group A with that result today. But Nader Manua, you were watching this one closely for us. What did you think of England's performance?
To be honest, I thought England looked good. I think going over there, you had a feel that maybe it would be a lot tougher than it probably ended up, because you've seen that home support. We saw it in the Euros. But I think overall they controlled possession well. They never really let Hungary get too much on the front foot and give the crowd something to chant positively about. So credit to them. It looked like a very professional performance. And, you know, if this is the England side going forward, I think they look good.
Yeah, obviously, definitely looking good, 4-0. You've got to be happy with that one. Gab, do you have anything to say about England under Gareth Southgate? Obviously, this was their first game back after that loss in the final of Euro 2020 to Italy.
I don't think Southgate could have hoped for a better reaction. You know, if there were going to be, cobwebs or residue from what happened on July 11th at Wembley, well, the players showed that they're professional, they moved on from it. And you could look at this and say Hungary weren't particularly good, and that, you know, England, it's two goals in transition and two goalkeeping errors. But ultimately, this is the way Southgate wants to play. When he plays that way, against the right kind of opponent, and they attack well on the counter, England will win, and on nights like this, they'll win big.
A big win, and so the win was the good news. The bad news was racist chanting in the stands, and it shouldn't come as a surprise. Hungary already under a three-game stadium ban from UEFA for racist and homophobic chanting. But under FIFA ruling, and with these being FIFA World Cup qualifying, that doesn't apply. But FIFA can be expecting to hear complaints now, because this is exactly what happened. We saw the cups thrown as well, Ali, after Raheem Sterling's goal, and it's just not good enough, especially when we know that this has happened before and their fans are allowed in under a different ruling.
That whole thing is just shady. The fact that they can get into the stadium on a different ruling, that to me in itself is obviously incorrect and should not happen, and it's unacceptable. The fact that we're having this conversation still in the year 2021, it's incredible to me. And yet, in so many ways, because we keep seeing it happening, then we sort of get used to these things and go, are we ever going to get better? Is it ever going to get better? Are the punishments enough? And are the organizations involved punishing this countries and these teams the way that they should? Because obviously the message is not getting through. So how far can you go? Well, you go as far as you need to go in order to make a point. And at this point, this is so incredible that we're still having these conversations. And whatever reactions we have, apparently that's not enough. So you got to push it as far as you possibly can if you are a governing body and punish these teams accordingly.
Nadim, surely UEFA and FIFA have to be working together at times like this when there has been a ban for fans, and then you can have all those fans back in, and guess what? It happens again.
You would think so, wouldn't you? But this kind of sums up the whole situation within football. You know, in our world, no, you can't do this. You know, we're going to ban you. But then, you know, next week you can go and have fans in there. And it's stupid. Like, when I was watching the game myself, I was thinking something's probably going to happen. And lo and behold, something happened. But then even if you want to talk about the governing bodies and the punishments that they've given out, I think when you look at the source, because let's be clear, it's not everybody in the stadium that's doing that. But I think there were quite high up Hungarian officials who were critical of UEFA for the punishments which they were given based on what happened in the summer. So when you hear that that's how they feel about it, then they're going to find every way possible to put fans in a stadium because they don't think they're doing anything wrong. And I think for me, you know, we can criticise governing bodies, but that is the bigger issue in my opinion. And I don't know how that's going to change if they're 100% adamant that this type of behaviour is perfectly acceptable.
And it's problematic, Gab. Even before the game, Gareth Southgate was asked what would happen if there were problems there. And he said, you know, we've had problems ourselves back in England. Look what happened in the final. And now this has happened, though. You know that England are going to go and have to complain about this.
Yeah, no. And I think they're different things, right? I mean, you could argue that it's obviously all part of the same problem that people feel that they can get away with things with impunity, whether it's racially abusing somebody on social media, booing the anthem, or racially abusing somebody in person and throwing objects as happened at the Puskas Arena. We can all say that, you know, they're all symptoms of the same sickness, but there's different cures, and there are real cures that can be done. This justification that, well, it's a different competition, and so the same way that, you know, if you get a stadium ban in the Premier League, it doesn't apply in the Champions League, that only carries so much water. You know, it's international football, and I think, and, you know, you're absolutely right, the fact that they were punished by UEFA, the fact that they had this acrimonious thing in the summer, it just led a bunch of people saying, well, you know, oh, look, England are coming. If we're going to go down, let's go down swinging. Let's get a ban here, too, by a different organization. Let's have one last hurrah. And unfortunately, this is how a minority of these fans think. And then, you know, they think that they're making a statement against the governing bodies by acting this way. And I think it just made it worse. And as Nadim said, you could easily see this coming. And what's disappointing to me is that the local authorities in Budapest and the build-up to the game, I think they could have done a much, much better job mitigating it and paying attention to what was going on.
And I'm sure we'll hear more about that, but let's focus back on the football in Group B. Sweden beat Spain. In fact, they beat them 2-1. And the winning goal, brilliant work from Dejan Kulusevski, who was brilliant in the game to find Viktor Claesson and make it 2-1. Spain losing hold of top spot in their group, and it means their 66-game unbeaten run in World Cup qualifiers comes to an end too. That dated back to 1993. But on the day, for Spain, Ali Moreno, questions of the defence.
Well, more so the defence. I'll start with the midfield. When Spain is at their best, and when they have been at their best, the quality of their possession in that part of the field dictates everything for them. When they start turning the ball over in that area, now they're in trouble because they don't have enough physicality, nor do they have enough legs in that part of the field to go chase and transition. And they're not good enough defensively in 1v1 situations once they go chasing. So Kulusevski and his speed was creating problems. Isak and his speed was creating problems. The other thing that I would say, if you go back to the Euros and the game between Sweden and Spain, well, this was all about Sweden absorbing pressure. You know what? We are going to give this team a whole lot of respect. We're going to give them the ball. We're going to defend back here. Today, there was a change from Sweden. They decided, we're going to pressure higher up the field. We're going to take the pressure to Spain. And what we saw is that Spain could not withstand that pressure. They turned the ball over in bad areas. And from then, Isak takes advantage of the opportunities. Kulusevski, who was outstanding, also took advantage of all the spaces that were available to them. And then confirmation of what we already knew from Spain. Limited. Once they create opportunities as to who's going to be the one that is going to put that chance in the back of the net. It's the same story as it was from the Euros. Is it going to be Morata? We don't know. Is it going to be Gerard Moreno? I don't know. Adama Traore comes off the bench. He makes a difference, but then that final product is not quite there. And you can say the same thing across the line in the attacking half for Spain. No final product, poor defending, poor possession. What do you expect?
Euro 2020 champions Italy back in action and held by Bulgaria on the day, but they did equal Spain's record of 35 international matches unbeaten. Yatsuri dominated the second half against Bulgaria but couldn't find the winner. What did you make of them today, Nikki Bandini?
I thought there was some really good and there was a certain amount of complacent. It felt like after that first goal there was perhaps a little bit of presumption in the team that, okay, we have won literally every qualifier we've played under Roberto Mancini. We've just won the Euros. This is Bulgaria. They've played six games under Petrov and they haven't won any of them. And perhaps there was just a little bit too much presumption that a second goal was going to come, that things were going to be straightforward, which in the end they weren't. And in the second half, I thought maybe some of Mancini's changes weren't quite right to open up the game. I don't think it's a result that Italy need to worry about. As I say, he's won every previous qualifying game he had between the Euros and now the World Cup qualifying. So sooner or later, you're going to have that night when the ball just doesn't quite roll for you. I thought Federico Chiesa was once again electric. Interesting to see that back-to-back with Kulusevski, by the way, who for Juventus hasn't been doing so well, but for Sweden still has that same energy. And you think, well, there's that post-Ronaldo future we talk about. But Chiesa has just got something, I think, at the moment in particular, but in general, where when you see him with the ball at his feet, it just sparks go through you. You know something's going to happen, and it did tonight. He has that bit of magic, and he's becoming something really, really special. I felt like Italy, as a team, there were things lacking, but I think that with the game against Switzerland coming up against the weekend, there's obviously some pressure. Switzerland are the other team in that group who are unbeaten. They've only played two games. But I don't think this needs to be a result that Italy are going to worry about too much just yet.
What were your thoughts on them, Gab?
I thought they played well. I mean, I look at the chances created, the chances conceded. I think I could be mistaken, but I thought the goal was Bulgaria's only shot on goal. That doesn't concern me as much. They're going to be behind because, physically, because most Serie A clubs, where most of the players come from Serie A, where they started the season a little bit later. Unlike Nicky, though, I am a little bit concerned about the Switzerland game, because as we know from last time around, and I'm so comfortable with it that, I'm willing to jinx it. When you've got two teams in the group and only one is guaranteed a spot, then you risk the playoffs. And in the playoffs, anything can happen. So I think, I'm not saying Switzerland is necessarily a must win, but it's obviously a situation where if you don't get your way, you risk finding yourself in second place. And that's not a great place to be in. But as for that kind of presumption, I think that is what Nicky called it, that's the flip side of confidence, right? So when you're playing well, when you're saying, yeah, the goal will come, we're in control, we're creating chances, we're stroking the ball around, and then it does, then you score, it's like, oh, look, how great, you were confident. And then when you do it and you don't score, then, oh, were you being a little bit arrogant? I don't know. I think they're in good shape at this stage in terms of performance. Obviously, three wins would have been a lot better.
Nicky, I hear you laughing there.
Yeah, Gab's right, of course. If the game doesn't go that way, if Ilyev doesn't score the one chance, that confidence is it's that line between arrogance and confidence, isn't it? It's not arrogance if you back it up. And Italy could easily, I think 9 times out of 10, would win this game comfortably. Fascinating little story with Ilyev, by the way, who's just joined from a Bulgarian second division team, has joined Ascoli in Italy. So he's just coming to Italy and has sort of heralded himself as a Serie B player, in fact, with this goal, and he took it very well. I do think if we're talking about presumption, it's not so much the attack, who, yes, had chances, maybe again on another night one of those goes in. Georgiev made some great saves. I thought Florenzi was a little bit just too the opposite of sort of feeling confident and going forward, just a little bit too relaxed on the ball, really, is what I mean with presumption, and gave that away a bit cheaply. And perhaps the tracking defender inside as well just wasn't as alive to that threat as they should have been.
Thanks, Nicky. Let's head to Group J now, where Hansi Flick's Germany got off to a winning start with a 2-0 victory over Liechtenstein. Goals from Timo Werner and Leroy Sané, although they do still trail Armenia in the standings by a point. Armenia first, Germany second. In Group E, it was a big win for Belgium, 5-2 over Estonia. They sit on top of the standings with 10 points. And on the day, Lukaku had a brace among those five goals.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Guess who was the headline in the Portuguese papers, Ali Moreno?
Bruno Fernandes.
No.
Oh.
Cristiano Ronaldo, becoming the all-time leading goal scorer in international men's football. 111 goals. You know it. You saw it. Left it late to score the winner in that game. And here is how it finished, Portugal against Ireland. But there's a big talking point that's come out of that game, and it's not just about his goals. It's not about his penalty he didn't manage to score. It's about this moment where he slapped, shall we say, Dara O'Shea.
Yeah.
Was he fortunate to be on the pitch?
I think he was. Now, I heard the discussion with Stevie and Shaka and some of the other guys on the show yesterday. And the one thing that I fully, wholeheartedly agree with is that had O'Shea done that to Ronaldo, O'Shea would have been given a red card. 100%, no doubt about it. So this is not the first time nor the last time that a superstar gets preferential treatment. Again, had O'Shea done this to Ronaldo, would have been a red card, no doubt. And even having been Ronaldo to O'Shea, there's an intent there by Ronaldo. Is the contact negligible? Maybe. Is it significant enough? Well, we can argue that all day. But was there an intent from Ronaldo? And it wasn't just a push away. It was a full-on swing to O'Shea. I think it's worthy of a red card.
Even though it wasn't for nothing, it's because obviously O'Shea was trying to put him off with what he did.
Now, we can talk about the fact that O'Shea is an idiot, but that's a different discussion. That's the behavior of O'Shea here, which, by the way, I can tell you that whether you like it or not, if you're Ireland and you're going to beat Portugal, sometimes you're going to do some things on the fringes of legality, right? You're going to do some things that perhaps you are baiting an opponent. You are trying to get a reaction from Ronaldo because you know that as a team, with the talent that you have available on the field, it's uneven. It's a mismatch. So you're trying to create something that makes this more of an even fight. So you do these sort of things if you're O'Shea. The only thing that I would say to O'Shea is that if you're going to do what you just did and you're trying to get a reaction from Ronaldo, don't walk away. Stay right there and take the slap in the face, and then it's fully a red card. So if you're going to behave like an idiot, then do it fully, completely, and commit to it. As for Ronaldo, it's inexcusable. He was asked by O'Shea to provide a reaction. He provided that reaction, and he should have been punished for it.
And what were your thoughts on the incident, Gab Marcotti?
Ali's 100% correct in the sense that if the shoe's on the other foot, you know, I think O'Shea's looking at a red card and a ban. There's a part of me, though, that especially earlier in games, I just don't want to see people get sent off. And I understand the provocation. I think O'Shea's reaction to me almost suggested like maybe he didn't want to get Ronaldo sent off. I don't know. But yeah, if it's the other way around, it's a red card. Well, the one thing I would say, though, is that Ronaldo obviously often gets kicked and provoked and so on. I'm trying to think back. I can't think of that many situations where Ronaldo has reacted to provocation and been sent off. It hasn't happened that often. So maybe in this one, he felt he could get away with it or whatnot. But there's no question. Other way around, he's off.
What did you make of it, Nadim?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with the guys. Like, I thought it was going to be a red card. And actually watching the game live, it was really weird because the referee probably spent 5 minutes looking at the penalty decision, thinking, did someone touch it? Did they not? And all this stuff. Well, something else has just happened. Are you now going to go and have a look at that? But instead, they just said, no, there's nothing to see here. We're just moving on. But, you know, if he's got him in the face, for me, it's 100% a red card. But, you know, in the end, sometimes these decisions are made and it's forgotten. But in fairness, you know, the keeper saved the penalty anyway. So O'Shea maybe did a good job in that moment. But just a shame he couldn't do it in that last minute when Ronaldo stepped up.
Speaking of decisions, Nadim, this is the first time I've spoken to you since Cristiano Ronaldo spurned Man City and decided to return to Manchester United. What did you think of that decision?
Did he, though, Kay? Did he spurn Man City or was he always going to go to Man United? That's the thing. Like, I'll be honest, I would have loved to have seen him play for City because, you know, the guy's a winner. He's arguably the best, the greatest of all time. And I think to see him go into that City side, for me, I would have fancied their chances of winning Champions League, winning whatever. Like, even moments like this, the dying second needs somebody to step up. Like, who's there? It's Cristiano Ronaldo. That's just who he is. That's just what he does. And if he would have, as I say, if he would have come to City, I'd have been delighted. But then on the other side of it, just me from a sort of human standpoint, the fact that a guy who loves Man United can go and play for Manchester United towards the end of his career and be coming back as a king, like, I'm happy for him. I think it brings tons of eyes back to the Premier League. And it's gonna be fantastic. I think the only person who maybe is in a funny situation is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer because now the expectation's now through the roof. But, you know, I like it. I'm happy to see him back in the Premier League. It's a shame it wasn't for City, but it sounded like it was never going to happen anyway. So United fans are happy. Maybe United are back. Time will tell.
Even through gritted teeth, is pretending that he's happy too. I'm just joking, Nadim. I actually have heard you talking about this situation and I know that you're looking forward to seeing him back at United. Anyway, this is Cristiano Ronaldo on leaving Juventus. He says, "Today I depart from an amazing club, the biggest in Italy and surely one of the biggest in all of Europe. I gave my heart and soul for Juventus. In the end, we achieved great things. Not all that we wanted, but still, we wrote a pretty beautiful story together. You'll always be in my heart." Now, I won't go to Gab on the translation here because he wasn't too happy with the Italian here. But I'd like to speak to you, Nikki. How has Ronaldo's departure been taken back in Italy?
I think philosophically, I think a lot of people thought that this would be perhaps not a terrible outcome for everybody. I think it was, at a certain point, seemed quite an unlikely outcome just because of the money involved and no one was clear who would pay that for him at 36 years old. But actually, Juventus have gone through this really awkward last two seasons where decisions have been made that are sort of nothing to do with Ronaldo, although, of course, there's a domino effect that's gone on with all their decision-making. But decisions were made about how the club was going to be run and who was specifically going to be sitting on the bench at the club, going from Max Allegri to Maurizio Sarri, who was this really odd fit. They wanted attacking football, but he just wasn't the right person in the right mould for what Juventus are as a club and for the players they had. Then to Andrea Pirlo, where you're supposedly trying to bring through this youth movement, but Ronaldo is still there at the same time and Pirlo has no managerial experience. And finally, it's come full circle back to Max Allegri. And I think it was a moment when Juventus really needed to say, OK, proper fresh start this time. We're putting our faith back in a manager who we know has won the league over and over again for us. But we actually want him to do something that's more than just win this season. We want him to, well, he signed a three-year deal. We want him to achieve things all through that contract. And perhaps Ronaldo being there just limited the project to a one-year project as long as it was 1 year of Ronaldo's contract. Whereas Ronaldo not being there allows the club to think more long-term and about hitting a hard reset on everything that's gone wrong over the last two seasons. So not that people were happy to see Ronaldo go because he scored so many goals, even last season, more than 30 goals. But I think for the practicalities of where Juventus are, it kind of made some sense. And I also think it's worth saying that the fan connection that perhaps would have been there if this hadn't been a COVID year, hadn't been a pandemic year, of the fans being so close to the experience of Ronaldo in the stadium, that connection never quite took off as it was supposed to, and I think that probably made it easier as well to say goodbye.
Was his time there worth it for both parties, Gab, for Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus?
Well, Cristiano Ronaldo got to go and experience winning the league in another country, which is, you know, something he said he always wanted to do. So from his part, and he gave it a shot in the Champions League, and they spent money, they had players around him, and then it didn't work out. So I think from his perspective, I think he's probably happy that he did it, although, you know, probably felt that the team maybe should have done better in the Champions League. Whether it was worthwhile, you know, I think Andrea Agnelli continues to insist that it was. A lot of people at the club felt that it wasn't. Did they ever get that big quantum leap forward? No, but a lot of that is probably down to COVID. But I don't think there's any question that him leaving now is the best outcome for the club, for the reasons that we heard earlier from Nicky. If there is a regret, you know, is that, well, couldn't we have done this earlier? You know, couldn't you have told us in June, maybe even in May, that you wanted to go? Couldn't you have moved then? Because if somebody can explain to me what happened between, you know, late May and late August that all of a sudden prompted him to leave, I'd love to hear it. And I think the reality also from Cristiano's perspective, and let's not forget this, he's taking a pay cut to go to Manchester United. He would have had to take a much bigger pay cut to go to Manchester City. And if he'd done that and gone to Manchester City, we all would have been like, oh, look, he wants to win things. He wants to win the Champions League. You know, whereas at United, it's more like, oh, he wants to go back to restore the former glory. You know, we love our narratives here. I think the simple fact of the matter is he knows he realistically has 2, 3, 4 years left, but certainly more than one. And that maybe moving this summer was a better option than leaving as a free agent a year from now, especially if the team was going to be caught between kind of this rebuild, hard reset that Nicky talked about. I think he also knew that, unlike Sarri, who was almost like glad just to be there, and Pirlo and guys like that, if there was to be more of a push towards younger players at Juve and tactical discipline, you know, Allegri's not going to be intimidated by Cristiano. He knows Cristiano. He's been there. If Allegri had to make more tough decisions, give Cristiano more time off, I think Allegri would have done that. And maybe that played into the decision as well.
So is this the best outcome for all parties, would you say, Nicky?
Yeah, I think that's a really astute point from Gab. As all points from Gab are, but that last point is a really important one, because Allegri, right from his opening press conferences talking about Ronaldo, was very much talking about him as this valore aggiunto, the added value, and no longer being the core of the team, but being someone who could add something. So I think he was, even with his language, sort of setting aside the idea of a team built around Ronaldo. And I do wonder if Cristiano heard some of that and thought, well, is that still what I want to be part of? But I do. I think in the end, it's a good outcome for everybody. I agree with Gab that from Juventus' point of view, it would have been better if it had happened earlier in the transfer window. I think what Max Allegri really would have liked to happen in this transfer window is for a proper regista, someone who he felt confident could put their foot on the ball and dictate things in the middle of the pitch. He would have wanted someone in that mold to come in. And perhaps if Ronaldo had left sooner, there would have been more funds available to make that happen. And in the end, these late moves for Pjanic and Witsel didn't come off. So I think it could have gone more smoothly than it did. But I do think in the end that the deal is better for Juventus and better for Ronaldo.
For more football talk on topics like this, make sure you download the Gab and Jules podcast. Oh. But this week, it's Gab and Robbo.
And Stewie, and the astute points of Gab Marcotti. Yeah, stay tuned for that.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Make sure to join us tomorrow because we will be looking back on the USA and El Salvador's meeting in the World Cup qualifiers. Herc and Seb will be with us to discuss that. Make sure you stay tuned with us now, though. Extra time, Gab will tell us which sport he hates watching. I'm not sure he does hate watching it, though.
It's Gab. Just go along with it.
Yeah, you'll see, you'll see. Join us for extra time.
It's
Thanks
Gab.
For joining us for this.
What do you want me to tell you?
It's time for Extra Time. Kay Murray and Ali Moreno here with you. We've also got Gab Marcotti and Nader Manua to answer your questions. And the first question is for Ali Moreno.
Oh, are you okay? Okay.
I'm all right.
You've been a little rattled last week.
I have.
You want to tell the people
rattled.
What you did in the parking lot?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No fender bender talk here. Yeah. Thank you.
Don't park close to Kay.
Don't park close to me. We'll leave it at that, shall we? For LA, did Atletico Madrid finesse Barcelona worse by selling Griezmann for 120 million and loaning him back with the option to buy for 40 million, or getting Suarez for free last year, or selling Arda Turan when he was already trending downwards as a player?
Those are all great deals for Atletico Madrid and awful deals for Barcelona. It's hard to pick one, but let's just say that the Luis Suarez going for free to a direct rival, and then it was Luis Suarez, more importantly, and his goals that allow Atletico Madrid to actually win La Liga while Barcelona is trailing far, far behind in third place. I'm going to take that as sort of the worst outcome for Barcelona because we already know the outcome. We're yet to see what happens with Griezmann. But if you needed any evidence that Griezmann needed to go somewhere else, just watch the first three matches of this season where there was no Messi, where there were no excuses, where he was playing the free role that he was supposed to play when Messi was not available, and yet there was no Antoine Griezmann to be seen anywhere around the ball making an impact in the attacking half for Barcelona.
All right, it's an interesting one next. I'll ask both you, Nadim, and you, Gab. I'll start with you, Nadim. Does Ronaldo breaking the international goal-scoring record cement his GOAT status over Messi?
Ooh.
For me, yes.
Oh, okay.
As an objective Barca fan, Ronaldo has done it in multiple leagues, been more clutch in the Champions League, and has been better internationally. Mm. Curious for your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't think that cements it now because people obviously see the game in different ways. And as far as the international goals tally go, like Messi isn't taking part in the European competition, Ronaldo's not taking part in the South American competition, so it's not an apples for apples type comparison. So, you know, I get it. The guy's scored a ton of goals and has been, you know, so consequential in the history of football. But there's no argument which you can put forward which will cement either person. And it's ultimately why, you know, we love the game, because one person likes this, the other person likes that. But either way, I think we've been blessed with two great players.
I have a question, Kay. I have a quick question to Maestro, who says he's a objective Barca fan.
I'm a bit iffy on this.
Right, but it's a very simple question. One of the arguments that he's putting up is that Ronaldo was able to do it in different leagues around the world. So you're criticizing Lionel Messi and punishing Lionel Messi because he decided to stay in your team in Barcelona for all those years and to win all those titles? So that then becomes an argument against him. I'm sure that when Messi was part of Barcelona, you would have made the argument for Messi and for Barcelona and for him to stay in Barcelona. Can't have it both ways, maestro. Sorry.
No, Gab, I'm sure this is just what you were hoping for on tonight's Extra Time. Messi versus Ronaldo. What are your thoughts on this question?
With all due respect, it's a silly argument. This is a tremendous achievement. Cristiano Ronaldo is a goal scorer. Lionel Messi has also scored a lot of goals. We're not comparing apples. First of all, you don't just compare by number of goals. If you did, then, you know, why don't we put Ali Daei ahead of Lionel Messi, right? He scored many, many more goals at international level than Lionel Messi. But if you need to rattle off all the reasons why they're apples and oranges, I will, starting with the fact that Lionel Messi faced far more competition for a place in the side playing for Argentina than Cristiano does for Portugal. Mentioning the fact that, you know, he plays in South America, which means rather than European qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers, where you get, you know, let's face it, one or two cupcakes in any group, as Ali will no doubt back me up on it, it's not fun playing South American qualifiers where you get to go and play against Bolivia, you know, up in the sky, where you get to play against Brazil, you get to play Uruguay, you know, you get to play, should I mention Venezuela? No, but you get the picture, right? It is a much tougher,
grueling
situation.
You should mention Venezuela, because the last time that I played or my team played against Lionel Messi in a World Cup qualifier in Venezuela, we won 1-0. Yes, we did. Vamos, Venezuela!
There you go. There's no, and look, so it is a completely different situation. And by the way, it doesn't diminish Cristiano. This is an incredible feat, what Cristiano's done. But, you know, and I'll say on one other pro-Cristiano thing, people who say that, I looked at his numbers, his goal-scoring record in friendlies is something like 1-3. His goal scoring in official matches, his goal scoring rate is actually far higher in matches that actually matter relative to friendly. So I'm not diminishing this at all. I'm just saying, when you decide who the GOAT is, you got to do a little bit better than simply goal scoring records. And you can choose Cristiano or you can choose Lionel Messi. But if you choose Cristiano, there are many, many more compelling arguments and reason to choose Cristiano than simply counting up the international goals record, especially when both players are still active and one of them is a couple years younger.
All right, we're going to fly through the rest of these because we didn't expect a Messi versus Ronaldo so early on tonight's Extra Time.
Well, if only there was somebody who could control that, who was asking the questions. I don't know.
All right, LA. Divyan says, who's the more exciting player in La Liga among Vinicius and Joao Felix?
Vinicius. We don't see enough of Joao Felix. Injured all the time.
All right. That was nice, short, concise, to the point.
Yeah. Well,
A-star.
Thank you.
Ezio asks, and I'll put this to you, Nedim, how do you feel about Eden Hazard announcing that he might retire from international football after the next World Cup? Has there ever been a player to regress so much from his Chelsea days to where he is now?
I don't know. If his heart's not in it, then, you know, you shouldn't have to do it. But it's sad to see him in this current state. But I do believe he can get out of it. But, you know, this is football, unfortunately. It never seems that simple sometimes. But he's making his own decisions. He's earned the right to do that. So good luck to him. But hopefully he has a great tournament in Qatar.
I'll answer that question, by the way. Fernando Torres. From the very best out-and-out striker in the world to all of a sudden a shadow of himself. Injury issues, what have you, but then that regression from Fernando Torres was significant.
That was a big one. Nathan, how did you do against Fernando Torres?
I did well a couple of times, and then another time he scored a hat-trick, but, you know, it is what it is, eh? He was on fire at the time.
It's all right sometimes, but then knowing again, there was a little hat-trick in there.
So he played against Torres with Liverpool. Fernando Torres with Liverpool hat-trick, and then whatever he became, that's when he did well.
All right.
I can see that.
I need to take a breath to read this next one. It's for you, Gab. Is the Madrid derby the game to watch in La Liga this season since Barca has lost Messi and aren't much good either, and taking note that the Clásico will be played on the same date as other European classics and possibly have an intersecting time with these games? So basically the other big games will be played at the same time. Basically, let's put it down to, is Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid more exciting this season than Real Madrid against Barcelona?
Well, I mean, I think these are likely to be the two best teams in La Liga this season. They're the two teams with the highest chances of winning the title. So if that's your benchmark, then yes. If you like the classical, the rivalry, the significance and everything else that goes into Barca against Real, no, it'll always be Barca against Real. It's just the nature of the classical.
Matt says, and this is a very important question, Ale.
Okay.
So, Ale, yeah. After the end of the transfer window in Spain, we need to know who wins La Liga.
Okay.
Why are you laughing, Ale? Well, have you not been asked this before?
Three games in. Look, I know we have low standards when it comes to asking this question, but three games in, I'm going to suggest that what we saw from Atletico Madrid and Villarreal and the ending in that match is what people tend to label as the luck of the champion. When you get a point in a game that you should not have gotten a point from, that you should have lost, and it comes from an own goal where no Atletico Madrid player is involved, where a center back heads it into his own goal and the goalkeeper had gone hunting for butterflies, I'm going to suggest that that's the luck of the champion, Atletico Madrid.
All right. Ale, another question for you as well. Did you ever feel guilty for dying? Oh, actually, it's one for Gab here.
Okay.
It's is Tomiyasu an upgrade on Bellerin and Chambers, Gab?
Oh, the 1,000,000% in my opinion. And he's an upgrade on any of the central defenders with the exception of Gabriel at his best, possibly. Unless they have a center defender that I'm forgetting about. But no, I think he's the real deal. But just following the luck of the champions thing, what about the week before against Elche? Talk about luck of the champions. At least they played well against Villarreal and took a lot of shots. Against Elche, they were terrible. And then the goalkeeper wanders out and Correa scores and they get 3 points instead of 1 point. So I see where Ali's going with this.
Oh, Atleti it is. Ale, did you ever feel guilty for diving during a game?
No. The answer is no. And just to clarify some things here, I didn't just flat out dive. I drew contact, minimal as it may have been, but I drew contact. I didn't just flat out dive. That's my defense. And I did not feel guilty doing it, by the way.
Can I ask the defender what he thinks about this? Nadim?
Not for me. Not for me. Hate all that stuff. Not for me. No. I'm glad we played in different eras.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not that old, Nate.
I think that was a little bit of a dig.
I'm not that old, Nate.
Different eras.
Let's say something. Not that old. And you're not that young, more importantly. You're not that young.
I'm quite young, yeah.
Two different positions on the pitch, two different eras. All right.
Different eras.
Right,
the answer is no, by the way.
We'll go around the houses for this. We'll start with you, Gab. What's one sport that you just can't watch?
Golf.
Okay. Ooh. Interesting. Do you play it?
I have done, but I mean, there's just so much stuff out there. And the golf, and the way especially the US announcers are the worst. The way they start, you know that they're not actually out there by the putting green, right? You know they're away locked in some airless studio, but they lower their voice and talk like this in a whisper. I'm like, what's your problem? Why are you doing this? And it's so stupid. And then now these guys, Brooks, whatever his name is, and the other fool, and going back and forth like we're supposed to care, like it's a real rivalry, like it's freaking WWE.
Because otherwise people lose interest.
Don't
they follow them around every hole? Are you... Is that why they're talking quietly? Because they actually are there.
Mm-hmm. No, they don't. They're locked away in the clubhouse, aren't they?
No, they're not, Gav.
That's because he doesn't watch it. That's why.
No.
So we'll let him off.
There are groups that are followed by a specific reporter who is breaking down what the yardage is going to be, is doing. So, and those are the ones that usually are sort of whispering into the mic. And also, there are others I know, but then there are other guys who are in towers that are right next to the green. So, therefore, they also have to whisper because they are within a close distance of the green. So... you got to get your reporting correct on this one.
You make it seem like there's 100 different people talking at once. It's the main guy at the beginning, and they get so pompous about it.
Oh,
And then there's the stupid sandwiches and Augusta.
It sounds to me like Gab does
like it,
watch
fine. Different people like different things. No, I know enough about it. I just don't like it. Except for the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup is different, but I'm told the Ryder Cup's not really golf. It's a completely different thing. Ryder Cup, I'll watch that. That'll be exciting. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But the other stuff, come on, man.
He knows a lot about watching golf.
It goes on for hours and hours.
Somebody doesn't watch golf. Hey.
So Ryder Cup is synchronized swimming,
okay.
Apparently. Yes, it's not golf.
So if you don't like watching golf, the Ryder Cup is the one to watch. Nadim, what's one sport that you just can't watch?
So this might be a bit controversial for the American audience, but I would never go to a stadium to watch baseball. I would not watch baseball. It's just not for me. It's just not for me at all.
Oh, that hurts a little.
That hurts
because I grew up with baseball in Venezuela. Mm.
Venezuelan audience, too.
So then I would turn it right back around and say the one sport that I would not watch on TV is cricket because I don't understand it. It's crazy talk to me. And there's people running, and then it takes days in order to play the match. I don't understand it, but I can see the value of it, I suppose. I just don't understand it enough to care for it.
Well, that's fair enough, I think. Fortunately, all of these guys love watching football, which is why they are able to answer
what
your question.
What do you hate?
One that I don't really like watching. It's not going to please you too much.
Middlesbrough.
Nadim.
Is that sport?
You know what? I was just going to go on your side there, Nadim, and back you up. But you know what? That's the end. And that's my end with Nadim Manua. If he's ever on the show again, I might decide not to be. We'll end it there, shall we? Can't believe you, Nadim.
Okay. So did you say what do you hate?
Block him on Instagram and delete his number. ESPN FC available daily, 7 days a week. It's baseball that I
don't. No, don't
Sorry,
do
Ali.
That.
Sorry. But I'm willing to learn more.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.